Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials, as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Welcome to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, and a happy new year to each and every one of you. It's hard to believe that it is already 2020. Do you do resolutions? Have you ever actually kept one? I'm sure as a kid, I used to make them, but honestly, I can't remember the last time I even thought about actually making one. I know several people who say they are going to do a dry January, and I don't know. I know better than to make that one. It's just not going to happen, so why even pretend? But I'm curious as to how and when that resolution became about. I mean, it just seems to have sprouted out of nowhere. I wonder how many people actually keep that one for the whole month, or is it, you know, like the gym membership resolution? Have you ever been to a gym at the beginning of a new year? You can't get on a piece of equipment. Then, by the second week, it seems like there are less people. By the end of January, there is a significant thinning of the herd. And by February, yeah, it's pretty much back to normal. Equipment available whenever you want, classes are no longer packed, and you can get your own lane in the pool. Well, if you do make a New Year's resolution, I wish you the best in fulfilling it. And if you don't, I hope there is something in the new year that you are looking forward to. Either way, I wish everyone a very happy and healthy new year. But today really isn't about resolutions. Today is a science day. Yes, today is a science day. Well, sort of. I'm going to be talking about science in the vineyard. Every winery says that they make exceptional wine. And come on, we know that isn't really true. Now, as you know, I will never tell you what to drink, but I think we can all be honest with each other and admit that there is some serious plonk out there. There are two well-known statements in the wine world. First, in order to create quality wine, you have to start with quality grapes. Great wine begins in the vineyard. And the second is that you can't make great wine from, well, pardon my French, shit grapes. Both are absolutely true. If your vineyards are not producing quality fruit, then no matter what you do, your end product is not going to be good. The most talented winemaker can turn great fruit into crap wine, but they cannot do the reverse. So here we go about, you know, how do we do this? How do we ensure that our fruit is the highest quality? Well, there are a few things. First, you need to know where you are. If you are in cool weather climate, then the vines are being planted should be cool climate grapes. And if you are in a warm weather climate, then, well, you can deduct what I'm going to say. Again, that is not to mean that Pinot Noir and Chardonnay cannot grow in warm weather. They can, and they do. But there is a difference between just growing and flourishing. As a wine lover, I'm assuming that many of you have been in a vineyard or two. And if you haven't, it's probably something that you dream about doing one day. But you've at least seen photos. Walking around the vines, picking a grape off the vine and popping it into your mouth, everybody wants to do that. Just be prepared to taste some bitterness unless those berries are almost ready to be harvested. If you have been in a vineyard, I'd bet many of you have oohed and aahed in the marvel as you bent down, pulled out your camera to take that stunning shot of the grape cluster hanging brilliantly on the vine, just waiting to be plucked and turned into wine. I can't count how many images I have of grape clusters just dangling in the sunlight or the sun setting perfectly over the vine. They truly are a beautiful sight, and I never tire of taking them or even looking at them. But the real question is, while you were trying to get that perfect shot, did you notice the soil that the vines were growing in? Did you observe if it contained pebbles, rocks, boulders? Was it sandy or loamy? Was the soil actually black, brown, or beige? Will all of these things impact how the vines grow and what grapes will be grown? How long were you in the vineyard and what time of day was it? Did you notice the sun? How many hours of sunlight does that particular row see on an average day? Yes, row, not vineyard, because each row can and most likely is affected differently. Heck, if you really wanted to get down to the nitty-gritty of it, each cluster, no, each berry is different. For example, the fruit on the inside of a cluster will have a different temperature than the outside berries, and the fruit on the ends of the rows of the vineyards will see different heat spikes than those in the middle. But I could go on for hours and hours, and that's a bit off the track from where I wanted to go with this podcast. Where I want to bring you are the aspects of how we grow the vines and some decisions that are made along the way. You probably have seen, at least in a photo, an image of an old vine Zinfandel. They are what are called head-trained. They have no support system. They look more like bushes than the vines we are familiar with. And if you listen to this podcast on a regular basis, earlier this year on Winefabet Street, we visited Greece for an in-depth study of Aceratico. Those vines grow in a circular crown called Kulare that I personally think are some of the coolest looking vines. I'll have an image in the show notes. See, I did it again. I went off track because seriously, wine is just so amazing that it's easy to get diverted. When have you been in the vineyards? Did you notice that the vine management varied? Heck, it could vary within the same vineyard. Well, my friends, this is where we get down and dirty with the science behind what those vines look like. Before I go too far astray, let's talk about the plant itself. Grapevines are deciduous plants. This means that they lose their leaves in the cooler months. It may not be the most popular time to visit a winery, but vines in the middle of the winter are equally beautiful as in the summer. And don't even get me started on their charm during the fall when those leaves have begun to change colors. They can live for hundreds of years by simply following the same annual growth cycle. In terms of winemaking, the cycle involves 7 different stages. Each stage plays a critical step in the development of the grapes. The stages are bud burst, the first growth in the spring. We see the little buds beginning to sprout out of the canes. Next, flower cluster initiation begins. These can be seen as little, tiny BB-like objects that as they develop, create the third stage of flowering. This is a very critical point in the fruit's development. Heavy rains, wind, or frost can damage them and impact the fourth state, which is fruit set. If all goes well with set, the next stage where those beautiful berries are developing on the vine under the canopy of the leaves. Then when the timing is right, we harvest the fruit. And the final stage that is just as important, but often overlooked by wine lovers, is allowing the vine to go into dormancy, where it can rejuvenate itself for the following year. Now, prior to the mid-1800s, European vinifera were planted on their own roots. Unfortunately, for most wine regions, phylloxera was introduced into the vineyards when American varieties were imported. This was disastrous and resulted in mass destruction. You know, you really shouldn't bring things from one country to another country. What is maintained in one country can be disastrous in another. And that's what we saw with phylloxera. Those American varieties that evolved in the presence of phylloxera became tolerant to the lice that were feeding on them, rendering them immune. So while many native varieties can be grown successfully on their own rootstock, Vitis vinifera and many hybrid varieties need to be grafted. Another advantage of grafting rootstocks is the ability to combat other soil-borne pests such as nematodes, as well as increasing their tolerance to drought, pH, and salinity levels in the soils, along with living in poorly drained soils. The rootstock
also affects vine growth, yield, fruit quality, and of course, ultimately, affects the wine's quality. Above all else, vineyard site selection is probably the most important decision a grape grower needs to make. Since it takes several years for a vine to develop into an established vineyard that produces fruit, a poor decision in the beginning could lead to a major financial disaster a few years later. Most grapevines can grow in a variety of places, but different varieties definitely prefer different climates. Heat summations, seasonal variations, longer-term cycles, and fluctuations, and weather hazards. In order to get the best fruit, it is imperative that the vine stays in balance. So what do I mean by that? It's not like juggling anything. It's not walking a tightrope. Well, just as we need to eat a properly balanced diet, the grapevine needs to remain in balance. The vine needs to be able to grow its foliage, roots, fruit, and establish a trunk. Depending on influences such as soil texture and depth, rainfall, and seasonality, the grower must adapt irrigation, fertilization, and viticulture expectations. If the vine becomes too green, it's not going to produce enough fruit, and vice versa. In other words, undercropping is just as significant a problem as overcropping, and both lead to poor wine quality. In order to maintain this balance, several important decisions are made by the grower. These include trellising and irrigation decisions for the entire vine, in-row spacing, pruning, shoot thinning, and crop dropping in order to help the balance. Sometimes we drop great-looking fruit to make that vine in better balance and leave the fruit on there to allow it to create a better end product. Leaf and lateral removal are required to adjust for light penetration, as well as the choice of the support system that the plant will grow in. This brings me back to my original question to you. When you are in the vineyard and admiring those beautiful clusters, looking at that perfect sunbeam to light those berries, have you ever noticed the differences in the vines? We've talked about the head tray in Zinfandel and the basket growth of the Collari, but now I want to introduce you to a trellis system that allows the grapevines to grow to the best of their abilities in the environment that they are planted. And now, a word from our sponsor. Looking to be in the know about Dracena wines? Want to know when we release our new wines? Find out about all of our accolades and get some behind-the-scenes information? Well, all you need to do is sign up for our newsletter. There is no commitment necessary, and I promise you we won't spam your mailbox with loads of messages. Need another reason to sign up? Quite possibly the best reason? You will immediately get a code for a special discount on all of our wines and be privy to newsletter-only specials. Let Dracena Wines turn your moments into great memories. Sign up simply by heading to our website, dracenawines.com, and fill out the pop-up or sidebar. It will take less than a minute of your time, but the rewards will last forever. The purpose of the trellis is to support the vines themselves as they climb. Think about if you were walking around all day holding your arms out. Eventually, you're going to get tired, probably rather quickly. This is the same for a grapevine or any climbing plant. These plants have tendrils, and with the aid of the trellis, the climbing plant wraps itself around the support system so that it can grow larger. Over the past two decades, not only the trellis and training designs, but the advancements in vineyard design and canopy management have all significantly improved wine grape productivity and fruit quality. Generally speaking, trellis systems can be separated into two categories: the non-divided or single canopy systems, and you guessed it, the divided canopy systems, as well as those that employ both horizontal and vertical canopy division. Now, although I could go on for hours and hours about the different trellises out there, I don't think it would really make for a very good podcast, since in order to see the differences or understand the differences of trellises, you kind of need to see them. And that doesn't work so well on a podcast. So go out there and Google the different trellis systems and then go out into the vineyards and check them out. It's kind of cool to see which trellis systems are used on which vines and in what regions. But what I can share verbally with you today is when the vineyards are planted, there is significant effort put into matching the design and the trellis system that is used to provide the most potential for that vine's health. When choosing a support system, it is imperative to anticipate the vigor of the vine and the canopy size. Think about it. A highly vigorous vine would require a larger system. Going back to my analogy of holding your arms out, it is easier to hold your arms out if you aren't carrying any weight than if I put 5-pound dumbbells in your hands. And that would be easier if I upped those dumbbells to 10 pounds. So another huge player in the decision-making is the climate. Not only, as I mentioned earlier, about what vines to plant, but it plays a major factor in the vine's potential. All of the variables we consider when choosing a grape to plant, temperature, rainfall, sunlight, and wind velocity, are also considered when choosing what trellis system we are going to use. Warmer weather leads to larger canopies. High winds and cooler climates tend to produce smaller canopies. The choice of the trellis system is dependent on what size of the canopy we are looking at. Let's take another look at the soil again. See, there was a reason behind my madness of bringing it up earlier. Not only are the minerals and nutrients found in the soil matter, but the amount of moisture retained is important. More fertile soils with good water retention support vigorous growth. But those that don't allow the roots to penetrate deeply or have lower nutrition available will lower the vine's ability to produce a bigger canopy. We also need to consider how we will be working the vines. Will there be irrigation? What will the row spacing and row orientation be like? And will the vines be hand or mechanically harvested? So many decisions are important to the future of the vines we grow and harvest. Vines are living organisms, and although they can't move or really speak, they can tell us what they need. So when paying attention to them, they'll share if they require more or less sun. Is there too much or too little water? And even whether or not it wants you to trim back its leaves or fruit. All we need to do is listen. Well, observe. And then it becomes rather obvious, and we can make the best wines that vineyard has to offer. Sláinte. This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week, sláinte.